It's The Record on KUOW Seattle. I'm Bill Radke. Ever since allegations of sexual harassment and assault against Harvey Weinstein surfaced, there's been a deluge of women speaking out about their experiences in the workplace, and this includes state capitals. Several women who worked at the Washington state capitol say they have experienced groping and other unwelcome behaviors by men over the past decade. These women agreed to speak to KUOW and the News Tribune of Tacoma. Joining us now is our Olympia correspondent, Austin Jenkins. Welcome, Austin.
Thanks for having me.
What did you find?
Well, we spoke with nine women. They are, as you said, current and former legislative staffers and lobbyists. All but two of them agreed to speak to us only if we agreed to protect their identity out of concern for their careers. The two that did agree to let us use their names are no longer working in Olympia. They are former state representative Jessen Farrell, who ran for Seattle mayor, and Nicole Grant of the King County Labor Council. All of these women said they had endured unwelcome attention from men while working at the Capitol. This includes for male lawmakers and for male lobbyists. For the most part, it was comments about their appearance. It was physical touching, like a hand on the lower back or a massage that they didn't want, or a lingering hug. Other times it was more than that. Both Farrell and Grant said that they had been groped or touched on their behinds. Here's Grant describing an encounter she had back in 2011 with a Democratic lawmaker who was no longer at the Capitol following a meeting in his office.
Right as I was stepping out the door, he gave my ass like a little pat or something, like a little slap. I just remember being like, what? And turning around and just looking at him in complete shock and just being like, I need to get out of here.
We heard a similar story from former state representative Jessen Farrell. She said that a lobbyist grabbed her in the rear in the hallway. And she said she was so shocked and embarrassed by this that she didn't say anything at the time. And later, neither she nor Grant reported these incidents. And that was a theme with all of the women that we spoke with.
In fact, we're going to hear from Jessen Farrell in just a moment. She's going to be in our studio. Why did these women tell you they did not report these actions?
The answer to that question is no different if you're working in the state capitol or anywhere else. What we heard is a combination of there's no clear place to go, especially if you are a lobbyist, because there's no formal organization or structure. We heard over and over again concern about the fallout and the blowback if they complained. These, especially for the lobbyist corps, they need access to lawmakers to do their job. There is concern that they will lose clients, that they will lose their businesses, that they will get a reputation as someone that you can't meet alone with if they complain about this. And then there are a lot of young staffers around the Capitol, and they were afraid of complaining because there's no guarantee of confidentiality, and they were concerned about their future advancement career-wise.
Well, what would the process be if somebody did want to report inappropriate behavior?
The House and the Senate both have very strict anti-harassment policies. They also have procedures in place for addressing violations, ways to do that informally and formally. The House and Senate actually have separate processes. Right now, the Washington House is in the midst of reviewing its policies and procedures. This is following a sexual harassment scandal in the Tennessee legislature. So you can go to the caucus, you can go to the administration in the House or Senate, you can try to address these things informally with the person you think whose behavior is a problem, or you can file a formal complaint. But once again, we were routinely hearing that from the staff and from the lobbyists that they saw no real percentage in proceeding with this process as it's laid out.
And what did women tell you it is about the legislature that makes this behavior tough to address?
We heard over and over again the legislature described as a summer camp for adults. Keep in mind that the legislature convenes every year. In even years, it's for 60 days. In odd years, it's for 105 days. People are away from their homes. It's not a traditional 9-to-5 work environment. In fact, there are a lot of after-hours and off-campus events, some of them hosted by interest groups, some of them just at the bars. And there are late nights on the floor where people are still at the Capitol late into the evening. So an untraditional or non-traditional work environment, and then a tremendous power differential between the lawmakers and the staff who work here and the people who need access to the lawmakers to get something done.
Austin, I assume you know the name of that Democratic legislator who's behind padding you described, but you're not naming names of lawmakers or lobbyists who these women say acted wrong. Why is that?
This is true, and the reality is that, once again, there are no, as far as we know, no formal complaints or investigations, or if there are, we have not been able to obtain them from the Washington legislature because they have denied our public records request. And in fact, we're part of a lawsuit now challenging that denial. If there are records, we'd like to see them and obtain them. But at this point, there have not been formal complaints or investigations or reports to the police that we have found involving these individuals. So at this point, we are not naming them.
Okay, no formal complaints, no reports to the police. And we're going to continue our conversation with one of the women who has a story to tell. This is KUOW's Olympia correspondent, Austin Jenkins. Austin, thank you for your reporting on this.
You are welcome.
Now, with me in the studio is, as I say, one of these nine women who told their stories. Former Democratic state representative representing Seattle, Jessen Farrell. Welcome back.
Hello there.
Would you mind telling us what happened to you?
Sure. One story is that I was walking back to my office in the John L. O'Brien building, and a lobbyist just pat me on my behind, and it was shocking when it happened.
Shocking. And Austin mentioned your story briefly and said that you told him you didn't react toward the patter in the moment. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly wasn't expecting that. And so I, you know, in that moment, I almost questioned that it happened. But, you know, it definitely happened. And that hand was on my behind. But, you know, I had a meeting to get to. I had things that I had to do. I had bills to pass. And it certainly wasn't going to be something that I spent a lot of time on in that moment.
And what was going through your mind in the moments afterward? What were you thinking?
Again, I was shocked that it happened in the workplace. And, you know, I also felt a little ashamed. I think so often with these stories and these things that happen, women internalize it. You know, that initial thought was, did I do something wrong? And, you know, obviously I didn't, but that is a thought that crossed my mind in that moment. And then it was to just move on. You know, this is just, these things happen, and just get back to work.
That's remarkable to me that you would even have the thought that, did I do something to bring this on? I can't imagine what that would be or that you would do it. You know what I'm saying? But that you're saying that's a very common thought that pops up?
I think it is. And I'm trying to be a little more focused on when I have that kind of thought, because we need to interrupt that thought pattern, right? That a woman would feel shame when she was inappropriately touched. But I think that that is so deeply common when we read all of these Me Too stories. I think that that really is a common theme. And that's one of the reasons why we collectively haven't been having these conversations in the same way that we suddenly are now.
Well, as you heard, one thing that holds back telling a fuller story here is that people aren't naming names. Why aren't you naming the name of the person who touched you?
These are really big issues. You know, I think one thing I'd love to do is talk to some of the other women. It's potentially a career-wrecking thing to say. And it's a he said, she said story. And we know too often what happens in those he said, she said stories. The she said part of it is discounted, even though I'm a former legislator, even though in that moment I was a legislator. You know, it is a really, and you don't want to rock the boat. You want to get your work done. You know, you're down there to get work done, not to, you know, hold someone accountable for something like that. That's not why the people of the 46th District sent me down there. You know, it was to pass important policy legislation. So I think part of it is that feeling of, you know, again, internalized, not wanting to rock the boat, but also this fear that I won't be believed.
Well, this might be personal to you. You don't have to answer it, but you're a former legislator now. Do you still feel like you have something to risk by naming the name of this person?
Well, what's interesting is I told a lot of the stories that I told to Austin were in the Seattle Times a year ago. And it was a story that was run about me and former Governor Gregoire and Barbara Madsen. And at that time, my attitude was, you know, these are battle scars. This, you know, unfortunately is, you know, just it happens and we accommodate it. You know, I think a lot of the stories that that Austin was retelling are accommodations that women make, you know, whispering to other women, avoid that particular lawmaker, avoid that particular legislator. And, you know, the process for me internally right now is no more accommodations, but it still is that big test and a big risk to take to name a name. And, you know, it's part of a process. And for me right now, it is really important. You know, it's not fun to be on the radio about this particular topic. I will say it was a lot more fun to be on the radio last week with you.
Yes.
So, but part of it is that, you know, let's at least start calling it what it is. And that was really inappropriate, what happened to me and what happens to other women.
As you say, you told that story to the Seattle Times. And what was the reaction then?
Well, I think the thought was, at least amongst my colleagues, was Jessen knows how to advocate for herself. You know, if anybody does, she's going to say something about it. And again, I think that, as I mentioned just a couple minutes ago, my attitude was go get the job done, keep going. And, you know, and I didn't even really tell anyone at that, you know, a couple years ago when that happened about it happening, in part because I, you know, just all of the different feelings that happen around something like that. One of the most prevalent ones is to disconnect from that feeling and just get the work done.
And what about since then? What has changed for you since you told that story a year ago?
The Me Too hashtag has had a profound impact, I think, on so many of us. Just that very public coming out of almost universally of women suffering from a whole continuum of behaviors that are offensive, from words and looks to touches to rape. And, you know, seeing my friends and colleagues and, you know, over and over and over again on Facebook come out and say Me Too really had a profound impact. And, you know, Me Too.
Well, thanks for coming in and talking with us about it. I have a couple more questions.
Sure.
In Austin's reporting, he mentioned, he quoted women saying that there are work parties in Olympia that you're told not to attend because, you know, men there are going to try to get you drunk. And I wonder, how much does that hold back women's careers that they can't be at these even casual functions where business connections happen?
Well, I will say that so much of sexual harassment is about power. And one of the really difficult things about Olympia is there is a really deep power differential. And as a legislator, I was generally on the other side of that power equation.
Meaning staffers and lobbyists.
Yeah.
Who are...
So no one ever said that to me. Mm. I don't have firsthand of that kind of conversation, which isn't to say that those conversations don't happen. I was talking about the accommodations women have to make to be able to get that job done. And what's on my mind around this is, you know, there was some talk about Republican senators maybe in Washington, D.C. saying they won't take a meeting with a single woman or a woman alone, something
like
that.
Vice President Mike Pence, I think, says he doesn't have a drink or go to a dinner with a woman unless his wife is there.
Exactly. And that is a huge problem because the currency of that job is being able to have confidential conversations, exchange information, make deals. You know, you can't be able to do that without having a degree of trust. And if someone is going to touch you inappropriately, say something inappropriately, make you feel uncomfortable, it is really hard to get that job done. And so we do need to modernize attitudes down there so that women are truly on equal footing.
Jessen, I wouldn't be surprised if there are people who work in Olympia listening to us right now, maybe people who've even been inappropriate. Do you think any of these men are unaware that they did wrong? They think they're just given a compliment, or do they all know full well?
Well, I think that...
Or they're just, I'm just putting my hand, I'm just patting her reassuringly, et cetera.
So again, there's a continuum, but I think that the fundamental element of sexual harassment is about power and diminishing women's power. And that is usually the thread that ties all of these stories together. I can't say, sure, there are some people who, you know, may pat you on the shoulder and say, honey, right? And maybe that's, you know, not the most respectful word to use. But so maybe there is a little bit of a continuum. But deeply, we need to understand that sexual harassment is about power, and it's about diminishing women's power. And that on the one hand, there are a lot of men down there who are allies and who would never dream of doing something like that. And I think the step that has to be taken down there is to now say publicly, and we're not going to tolerate any of this. And that is a real change. Not just to have rules and regulations and some kind of, you know, disciplinary process, which are often really, really hard for women to go through, but a real culture shift where men are really stepping up and saying, and we're not going to tolerate this. There are a lot of public platforms in Olympia, you know, in the State of the Union address, for example, from the governor, something like that, where, you know, someone could say, we're not tolerating this anymore publicly. I think that would be very powerful.
Justin Farrell was, up just until recently, a state legislator representing Seattle, a Democrat in Olympia, and she's one of the women, one of the two women who offered her own name as part of this reporting. Nine women, seven of them spoke anonymously to Austin Jenkins in the News Tribune. Justin, thanks for telling us your story and talking about power and politics and how it's not okay, what's going on. Thank you. It's The Record. We'll be back in just a moment.